100 years of Davenport art and a young person's cause that impacts all of us in the cities. You may have never heard of Nicolina Pappas, but this 14-year-old from the cities is getting national attention for a nonprofit she created 6 years ago when she was just 8. We'll talk with her in just a moment, but first, celebrating 100 years for an institution in the cities. The Davenport Municipal Art Gallery opened its doors in 1925, featuring the collection of former Mayor Charles Ficke. It's grown into the Figge Art Museum and has received national, even international acclaim. The Figge is marking its century of existence with an ongoing 100 years of collecting exhibit, celebrating the items that make it so special. We're joined by Museum Executive Director and CEO, Melissa Moore. Well, what's interesting about the 100th birthday of the Figge is it actually started with a man named Ficke.
Yes, so no relation.
You gotta be careful. But Mayor Ficke had an amazing collection that started this whole thing.
He did. So before we had a municipal art gallery or any art gallery in the Quad Cities back in 1925, he had already traveled the world a number of times collecting art as he went, over 300 paintings. And he thought that, you know, when you have that sort of wealth, when you have that sort of privilege, that you owe it to the people who come next based on those who came before who got you to where you are. And so he donated those pieces to the city of Davenport, knowing that they would create what is now an art museum.
Well, and let's be honest, when it came to books and art, you'd have private collections that were far better than anything that the public could see.
Yeah, and he did the same. He donated many books to the Davenport Public Library, a number of artifacts and artworks to the Putnam Museum. So he really has a legacy in this community. What I think is really cool is once you establish a collection, other people then are inspired in the same way. And so we see collections from Clara Brandt, who was a woman who donated works in the 30s. She loved landscapes, American landscape paintings. You see C.T. Lindley. The Adler family loved Western art, so we have a number of these families that came forward inspired by what Ficke had done that got us to where we are today, because now we have over 6,000 artworks in the collection 100 years later.
When we talk about the collection and 100 years of collecting, some of these parts of the original contribution are going to be seen?
Yes. In fact, this is the largest amount of those works that have been on view for a very long time, probably the most that have been on view ever since we've been in our current building, the Figge Art Museum, which is 20 years old this year as well. So we're celebrating a lot of anniversaries. So when you come to 100 years of collecting, you get to see more of these paintings than you have before. An entire wall is hung salon style, which is really exciting for us because we have very tall ceilings. So floor-to-ceiling art.
Well, when you're talking about the Figge, and I know this is frustrating for you at times, when you talk about any museum, is somebody will say, oh, I've already been to the Figge.
Yeah. You know, and that's okay. Like, I get that.
But you do move things around a little bit. So let's talk about
that.
I mean, this is an exciting time to celebrate 100 years.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up. I understand that, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up in museums, so I know a little bit more about them. But for somebody who maybe came in fifth grade on a field trip, you got to see a lot, you don't always realize that we have three major exhibition spaces that we're turning over every 3 to 6 months. And in our permanent collection gallery, so the permanent collection are the pieces we own versus the exhibitions often we're borrowing from other museums or putting together for a time-bound period. We're constantly moving things around. There's always something new to see, just because we feel like inspiration and creativity, they come in many forms, and we want to share as much as possible.
When I think of the Figge, and I think of your collection, I instantly think of the Haitian art exhibit because of the prominence of that in the Figge's collection. And let's talk about that. The significance of the Haitian collection cannot be understated.
No, that's correct. It's one of the top in the world. And I think that it's unexpected here in Davenport. But when you go back through those collections that came to us, Dr. Walter Neiswanger, the Beaux Arts Society, you know, so many different individuals and groups saw the importance of these works and wanted to make sure they had a home here. It's also really interesting to me because you have similar stories in Waterloo, at the Waterloo Center for the Arts in Milwaukee. Milwaukee and Chicago. Just in the Midwest, we have such an appreciation for these works by Haitian artists, and they really are stunning. You know, we had the great grandson of a former president of Haiti, Erlans Hippolyte, was here just a week ago to see a portrait of his great grandfather that we have in our collection that his family has not seen before. So just there's this current connection too that our collections can inspire to bring really important individuals here to help move us forward into the next century.
Well, and it's not only that. Let's talk about, I mean, you've got a Rembrandt, you've got a Goya, you got Warhol, Renoir, Ansel Adams, Andrew Wyeth, Thomas Benton. It is amazing some of the artists that you have.
Yeah, and a lot of it goes back to those early collections. So, you know, because we have artists like that in the collection, it also helps us cultivate partnerships with larger organizations so we can continue to show even more like that. For example, we're partnering with the National Gallery of Art in DC. We're one of 10 museums that were selected by the National Gallery as part of the Across America project that they're doing to try to get their collections across the nation. And we have a Frans Hals painting that's on view right now. We have Cranach the Elder. These amazing works from the 16th and 17th centuries that you would typically have to go somewhere like Chicago or DC or, you know, New York to see. And here we have them at the Figge for 2 years because of the partnerships we've been able to build, because of the strength of our own collection.
You were talking about the traveling exhibits, and that is always kind of inspirational too, because it's not always typical artwork. I mean, you've done comics illustration.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've done different types of mediums. It's not just paintings on a wall.
No, I think one of our most popular exhibitions, I've been with the Figge for about 16 years now. One of our most popular exhibitions I've ever seen was Charles Schulz, so Peanuts, right? And that's maybe not something that people would automatically think of in terms of art, but it is artistry, and it is everyday artistry that you see that inspires people. So yeah, we've done that. We've done more experimental contemporary exhibitions, and then we like to balance it out with what you would traditionally expect to see, things that are maybe more realistic, like portraiture, landscape. We like to have a lot of fun.
There is a warm spot in the heart of many Iowans because of Grant Wood.
Yes.
and the connection to Eastern Iowa, in particular University of Iowa, of course, where he taught. And it's pretty much a renowned collection that the Figge has as well.
It is. And in addition to the collection, I mean, we have his painted self-portrait, his sketchbooks. We also have his entire estate. And so when Grant Wood died, unfortunately, too young, his sister Nan Wood inherited his estate, and she ended up selling it to the Davenport Museum of Art, which is now the Figge Art Museum. And so we have his mattress, we have his spectacles, we have the little cameo that his sister Nan was wearing when she modeled for American Gothic, that famous painting that's in the Art Institute. We have all of the American Gothic parodies that you can see online. We partner with Special Collections at the University of Iowa to digitize all of that so people can have fun exploring the archive. But yeah, Grant Wood is very important to us. And also to other art, you mentioned Thomas Hart Benton, John Stuart Curry, other regionalists who were doing very interesting things and who were all, if they weren't working together directly, they were all working kind of in tandem during a time when it was very tough. You have the Depression, you have the Dust Bowl, and they're looking at the goodness of the people and the strength of the land, you know, really getting back to that. So American Regionalist is an important collection for us as well, beyond Grant Wood.
In the art world, there is some belief that Grant Wood was not professionally trained, perhaps that his work is pedestrian. But it really does connect with people. And as you said, it came during a period of time of the Great Depression where Americans needed some uplifting.
100%. And you know, he traveled to Europe. If you look at some of his pieces, he was doing all different styles. He just happened to land on the one that he's become so iconic for with the rolling Iowa hills. Anybody who says Iowa is flat has never looked at a Grant Wood painting or driven or ridden a bike across it like with Ragbri.
So, yeah, very true.
I know.
So very,
it's not
very true.
Flat.
So let's talk about the Eastern Asian, the East Asian collection as well. I'm really bouncing from one type of genre to another, but that really is what the Figge has. It's got a little bit of everything, but some real amazing works.
A lot of woodblock prints, works on paper. And, you know, because they're works on paper, this kind of goes back to what you said earlier about how things are always changing. We have to be careful with those because they can't be on view for quite as long as, say, a painting because of the delicate nature of how they were created and what their materials are. So what we say we typically rest works on paper. So we'll have some of the prints up, and then we'll rotate them out with others so they can then have more time in dark collection storage. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we just need to be very careful about that. So the same is true with textiles. The same is true with photographs. You may see a painting that's up for 5 years, but you're probably not going to see a work on paper that is that often, like with some of the Asian pieces that we have.
That kind of brings me to the fact that you're displaying 100 years of collecting. Mm-hmm. What made you decide what gets included in that exhibit and what sadly is left behind?
It is so hard. Yeah. This is probably one of the hardest challenges that our curatorial team has. So when we started to conceptualize 100 years of collecting, how do you begin to show a story of the past 100 years? We decided pretty early on that it was the story of the collecting that we wanted to focus on. Okay. So we started with the individuals and families and organizations that had really given these larger gifts that helped catapult us to what came next. And so we have everything from the Fickies. I talked about Clara Brandt, Lin Lee. We have the Adlers. Brent Sikkema, more recently, he was he had a gallery in New York. Gave us a lot of photography, really helped us beef up that part of our collection. And most recently, Dr. Randy and Linda Lewis, who gave an extraordinary gift to us in 2024, mm-hmm. 44 works of American modern and contemporary valued by Christie's at $14 million. It's just unbelievable. So we really wanted to show kind of these big surges in the collecting. And what's been really cool is because of everything that we've been able to celebrate this year, especially around Evanescent Field, which is the light sculpture that we were able to do with the help of so many, there are others who have come forward to give us gifts to help launch us into the next 100 years. So just last week, I don't know if you knew Jim Victor.
Yes.
And he died tragically too young.
Absolutely.
7 years ago. Mm-hmm. In his estate, he left money to have a way to memorialize him. And so his brothers, as part of his estate, have worked with the Figge, and we've unveiled and dedicated last week two monumental digital works by Team Lab. It's an artist cohort out of Japan. These are works that will blow your mind, and they are all going back to the values that Jim Victor lived around: community, family, creativity, education. So there are gifts coming in even as we are sitting here talking that are going to help get us to the next 100 years. And it's going to be an even bigger challenge to tell our story at 200 years because of the amazing generosity of everybody who is here right now.
Well, and you know full well, I mean, being in the industry of museums, is that not every museum is doing necessarily all that well.
No.
And you take a look at the Figge, and you're looking at a prosperous future. I mean, what sets the Figge apart from perhaps some of these other institutions?
I think it's our community. I mean, we were founded as a community and a city museum, and it's really the community that has helped continue to grow what we're able to do. I also think that we have... We put education at the front of our mission, and I know a lot of museums do that, but we really live by that. We also, because of how our community is inclusive and so collaborative, we always collaborate in the educational programs and some of the exhibitions that we're doing. In fact, one of our exhibitions right now, we have pieces we're borrowing from the Putnam. You know, so just... all of our museums and organizations here are so interwoven that I think that is why we're positioned to be in such a strong place right now.
Well, and it's interesting because the Davenport Museum of Art was on Museum Hill.
Yes.
Next to the Putnam for the longest time. Kind of, you know, it was a beautiful building.
Yeah, it was.
But not compared to what you constructed 20 years ago.
No.
The downtown Figge is actually a piece of art in itself.
It is.
How do you think that building transformed the art world for the city?
I mean, this is one of Sir David Chipperfield's masterpieces, the architect who did this. He just won the Pritzker Prize last year. I mean, he is such a prolific architect. The fact that the steering committee and the community supported bringing in an internationally renowned architect like Sir David Chipperfield to create this museum says so much about the investment that they wanted to make in this. It really transformed the riverfront, which I know was part of the Vision Iowa,
right.
You know, that helped the Figge happen. When we then, you know, originally originally, Chipperfield really wanted to light the building. He wanted to have it illuminated. And this was 20 years ago, you know, as they're opening. But that was just something we weren't able to accomplish at the time. Now, this year, bringing in artist Leo Villarreal to do Evanescent Field, he's worked with Chipperfield in the past on other projects. He really took it to the next level. So the building, like you said, is an artwork. The lighting of the building is an artwork that comes in view at night, every single night that we have it here. I mean, this is, it's remarkable that our community has this.
Well, I still remember when it opened, and you're walking into a building that is basically glass on all four sides. And you're going, wait, how are you going to show artwork
I know,
here?
Right?
And just the mechanical aspect of that building, how it's air conditioned, how the windows actually do shield the rays of the light. It is an architectural masterpiece.
It is, and we have students coming from very strong architecture programs like at ISU to come and see the building because they understand the importance of this to our region, but also to the story of architecture and what they can learn and what they can be inspired by as future architects. Yeah, the HVAC systems, you know, the reverse osmosis machine.
I know, like, there's so many things about that.
Yeah, climate control, even the crates that the artworks come in, like when the National Gallery sent their works, or we have some on loan from Crystal Bridges right now, which is another outstanding museum. The crates themselves have to be climate controlled exactly this, and cared for the same way as the artworks, just to make sure that you don't have any expansion or contraction there. So it's a really fascinating field. If you think about a museum, it's like a whole city, like business within a building, all focused around the art and the education and the community.
But one last time, it's 100 years of collecting.
Yes.
The Figge marking 100 years. Like we said, I mean, if you haven't been to the Figge, this might be the time to come back and visit.
It absolutely is, and I'll give you a few opportunities to do that. So every second Saturday of the month, we are free and open to the public, and we have activities for you to engage in, or you can just come and visit. Every Thursday night from 5 until 8 p.m., we go free, and we have dining service in our cafe. Come have a drink at the bar, or bring your family and get a sandwich basket. See for free, test it out, see what you think. And every summer we're free during the month of July, but we want you to come now. We want you to see this 100 years of collecting, because you're never going to see anything like this again. It's really special.
Our thanks to Figge Museum of Art Executive Director and CEO Melissa Moore. Just ahead, a 14-year-old girl's mission in the cities that's getting national attention. But first, some events you might want to consider for yourself, your family, and your friends, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Celebrate science, inventions, art, and history during QC Museum Month. Sign up for free for the chance to win amazing prizes. Then head to the Adler Theater for an unforgettable experience. You'll see incredible costumes, music, and choreography. Next, explore the gardens and learn about the creatures who make up the garden's ecosystem. Then, Miller's Petting Zoo will be coming to the Freight House Farmers Market on October 18th. And finally, get ready for a night of cocktails, competition, and pumpkin carving at the Mississippi River Distilling Company. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Nicolina Pappas was just 8 years old when a viral video of a turtle struggling with a plastic straw stuck in its nose helped her create a nonprofit, Nicolina's Turtle Company. It's all an effort to reduce plastic use and increase awareness about conservation. Now the Rock Island girl has just received the 2025 Gloria Barron Prize for Young Heroes, one of 25 young people highlighted for making a significant positive impact on people. Nicolina joined us in our studios. Well, first off, congratulations on the recognition.
Thank you.
How cool is it to get national recognition for something that you started here in the Quad Cities?
It's pretty awesome. It's been my dream since I was a little kid to get something this, like, globally and nationally known, so.
Well, okay, you're 14 years old right now. You started when you were just a kid, 8 years old, and you created Nicolina's Turtle Company because of a viral video.
Yep.
A straw and a turtle. Tell me, why did that spark something in you?
Yeah, so as an eight-year-old, seeing a sea turtle with a plastic straw being pulled from its nose by a marine biologist, that just wasn't a visual that I thought was happening in the world. So as an eight-year-old, I thought of a list of things that I could do to maybe help decrease the amount of plastics in our oceans to help maybe take down the percentage of animals that this was harming. And I came up with my nonprofit, Nicolina's Turtle Co. So.
And tell me how it grew from there. I mean, it's been, what, 6 years now?
Yeah. So I started out with just making these metal straw holders and selling them with metal straws, and then I donated all the money. I raised about $30,000 now with this award today to this day. And now we're sort of towards conservation education. And with my Skip the Plastic campaign, it's like getting the word out on single-use plastics and what people can do.
You know, I think, I don't know if you know Chad Pragracki. He was a young guy, and he wanted to do something. He decided to clean a river, and now you got Living Lands and Waters, and you know, nationally known, nationally recognized, and we have you doing this as well. I mean, it's really truthful that young people can change the world.
Yep.
Yep. Well, no, you're right. I mean, are you surprised at the power that you might have?
Yeah, so starting out, I thought that maybe my voice wouldn't really get the point across to especially like older generations, like adults, since I was just 8 years old at the time, and even me being 14 now. But it's really proved that people listen if you have a reason and if you have a voice and you have statistics to back that. So
why do you think that your voice has resonated? Because other kids have thought about this too. Other kids saw that video. Lots of people saw, you know, other types of videos of animals in harm's way, or that huge trash of plastic that's in the oceans. Mm-hmm. Why is it you think your voice made the difference?
I feel like a lot of people say that they're going to do something and then they don't. I, as an 8-year-old, took action on it, and I started something that could be built up from the ground and up. And I basically took on the role of sort of getting that word out there. So
Nicolina's Turtle Company, you're at a point right now, like you said, you started with selling some products and trying to get rid of the plastic straws. Now you're doing it more as education, making people learn about conservation, let them know about the world. Where do you see this growing? Where do you? Because like you said, you're 14, you got a couple more years left. Mm-hmm. So where do you see this growing?
So my biggest goal is to really get on national level. We're looking into ways to contact Eric Sorensen and talk to him about maybe getting my campaign, Skip the Plastic campaign.
So Western Illinois Congressman Eric Sorensen is who you're talking about. And what do you hope to get from him?
So my campaign, Skip the Plastic campaign, is basically urging restaurants and other eateries to only hand out single-use plastic straws and like cutlery upon customer request. And we got that through the Illinois State Senate and House of Representatives. And our next goal is to maybe sort of get it up there and be able to present.
Why do you think this is so important?
I think it's important because minimizing our intake of plastic and our usage of plastic in our daily lives really like decreases the amount of plastic that we put in the into the ocean, because every single piece of plastic that has ever been made is still on the earth in some form today, because it just keeps on breaking down into minuscule pieces. Mm-hmm. So it never really fully goes away.
Do you think people would be surprised at how much plastic we do actually throw away? And let's be honest, Americans are among the worst.
Yeah, honestly, I don't really think that people mentally see when they're like throwing away a food wrapper, oh, I'm throwing away this much plastic, and then you do it consistently throughout the day, and I don't really think people realize that.
So like you said, you received the award. Along with the reward comes a little extra cash. And that's important for you. Why? I mean, how do you think that you're going to be able to use this money to move your message forward?
Basically, we're looking into different ways. Like, if I do end up getting to national level with Eric Sorensen, I will be using that to, like, get up to D.C. and to be able to testify and stuff. So it's really just anything to get me up to that level.
Our thanks to Nicolina Pappas, the founder of Nicolina's Turtle Company and one of 25 winners nationwide of the 2025 Gloria Barron Prize for Young Heroes. Next year marks 250 years since America declared its independence in 1776. And throughout the coming year and leading up to the 4th of July, we're asking people about their civic spark, why they chose their career, and how it impacts our society. We asked Jerry Jones, executive director of Rock Island's Martin Luther King Jr. Center, about his civic spark. what drew him to be a part of the MLK Center for more than 25 years.
It's really simple for me. It is the concept of freedom of speech. It is the ability to be able to espouse different ideas in an open forum without being jailed or sequestered, especially during this incredible time of such polarization from left to right and even in the middle. This is where we can find middle ground and really push our nation to be better than it is now, to really realize the potential that exists in this great experiment.
Our thanks to Jerry Jones, Executive Director of Rock Island's Martin Luther King Jr. Center. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.